Hey, good morning, Karakeem. It's great to be with you today. And we've got a very special guest with us today. Sharon Boffman, our Chief Nursing Officer, is going to be with us to talk about a lot that's going on with nursing these days. But before we do that, I want to start with a really important message. So just please know that in prioritizing your own well-being and supporting our fellow care team members is super important. And just as important as caring for our patients. So it's a great time to remember to care for our mental health, just as we take time to care for our physical health. That requires that we make small, consistent efforts every day. MaineHealth Works on Wellness has a robust lineup of tools, resources, and learning opportunities to support your mental and emotional well-being. Even in the most challenging times, there is free support for you and your family through well-being resources like Talkspace, self-guided and resources for living. And these programs offer support to juggle everyday needs to include 12 free therapy visits per issue per year. These programs are designed to give you, along with your family members, confidential support at work and at home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I invite you to visit the Unified Intranet to explore upcoming opportunities to learn, practice, and grow. Sign up for an event today to review our wellness benefit packages. And please take some time to take care of yourselves. And, as I've shared with you before, there have been times where I've really struggled myself with the stress of being a leader, the stress of being a physician practicing and having a busy clinic. And it's so important to be open about talking to people about what you're feeling and what you're thinking. And I've been fortunate to be surrounded by good people who are willing to listen and willing to provide some support and guidance and help me through difficult times in the past. And so I think it's important that we all remember that none of us are invincible. All of us should try to check in with how we're doing in terms of both our physical and mental health and have a willingness to reach out and ask for help if you need it. There's no weakness in that. Sometimes it takes courage to do that, but it's important that we find it to take care of ourselves because we're not taking care of ourselves. It's hard to really provide the kind of care that we know we want to for our patients and our community. So thank you for all that you're doing. And just know that we want to be here to support you as an organization. So with that, we'll bring in Caroline. So Caroline, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been a busy week, as you've been talking about. Lots going on in the world right now, but I'm happy to be with you and happy to have Sharon on the program. She is such a delight. And there are so many things going on in nursing right now. It's really great to be able to have an opportunity for you to talk to Sharon about them and also for the care team to send in their questions. And of course, please do send in your questions for Sharon or for Andy. You can type them right there into the chat. Please make sure you use your first and last names as well as your pronouns to help me out there. And no anonymous questions as usual. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to you, Andy, so you can have a chat with Sharon.
Absolutely. And today I had to kind of put the tie on, so I couldn't show up in the L.L. Bean vest. And part of the reason, not the only reason, but part of the reason was I just came rushing in here from the Costas Lambrew, Dr. Costas Lambrew Research Symposium over at Maine Medical Center. We are MaineHealth Institute for Research. And all of our scientists are there really presenting on their research today. It's a big day-long celebration of what they're doing. Just an amazing team with some amazing research, and got to hear the better part of Dr. Nato's keynote address, which was really, really fascinating. Super, super smart people doing some incredible work at the Research Institute. Well, Sharon, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here on Open Door today. We're delighted to have you.
I'm honored to be here.
And really appreciate, and not just here at Open Door, we're delighted that you're a part of the MaineHealth family. You've really made a huge impact since you arrived. And you're coming up about 10, 11 months with us now
Yes,
at
yes,
MaineHealth, which is hard
yes.
to believe. It seems like just yesterday. You
Yes.
arrived with this,
Yes.
but again, have made a huge impact.
Thank you.
So, Sharon, you joined us coming all the way from Wisconsin
I did.
over to Maine. And tell us a little bit about why you became a nurse in the first place.
Well, I'm the youngest of seven, and my parents were elderly by the time I was in high school, and I became part of the care team for my parents. And I've always had the desire to care. It's kind of my role. I thought about becoming a veterinarian and then moved on to say, maybe I'm better off taking care of people. So that's how I ended up in nursing. And I'm very glad that that's the role I took. I really enjoy taking care of patients.
So when, as a practicing nurse, looking back on your career, what was one of your most fun clinical assignments as a nurse?
I enjoyed taking care of the elderly the best. They have the best stories. They're fun. They don't mind to joke around. That's just my favorite group of patients to care for. Oh,
that's fantastic. Well, so Sharon, you've developed, I mean, you've had a really, you know, a really inspiring career in nursing and ultimately nursing leadership. What got you interested in Maine Health?
Maine Health, it's an opportunity for me. I was a regional CNO prior, and this is an opportunity as a system CNO. So it was definitely a career promotion for me. And when I came, I felt very much at home here. There is a similarity to the Midwest in terms of the welcoming. It's beautiful here. People are very friendly. I just immediately connected and felt like this was my next step.
Outstanding. And as you think about our nurse, all of our nurses across the footprint who are doing amazing work every day, whether they're in our hospitals, our intensive care units, our physician practices, our other ambulatory settings, what are some of the challenges that nursing is facing right now?
Well, we're facing challenges with staffing, as you know, and right now the legislature is moving forward with bringing a staffing ratio bill forward. I do not feel that we need a staffing ratio bill. As you know, and maybe not everyone knows, Maine provides really high quality care already. And if you look at other states that have ratio bills, such as California, they are not doing as well in quality as we are. So to me, we don't really need a staffing ratio bill to solve some of the staffing issues that we have. In addition, I feel like nurses are licensed to make decisions about staffing already. We have professional organizations that provide us with staffing ratios. So I just don't feel like this is the answer to the problem we're trying to solve. And I'm worried about access. If we put in a ratio bill that's very strict and nurses can't use their judgment, we will have trouble with access. Getting patients out is already a challenge, and then getting the patients in that need to come is going to be a further challenge.
Yeah, and I think there's some important points there to kind of highlight. So one of them, which may be unsaid, but I think is imperative, is that we have an obligation to adequately resource our nurses and
yes.
ensure there are enough nurses to do what we're asking them to do, which is part of the reason that we've continued to invest in travel nurses
yes.
when we've needed to ensure that we can continue to provide access in our community. And the access challenges are real right now, just given what we are seeing with some of the other health systems in our communities. And we certainly want to continue to support them, but we're finding that as they're struggling to continue some of their programs, we're seeing those patients trying to migrate to us, which means that the pressure for us to continue to deliver those services has never been greater than it is today.
Right. And so we're working on the front side of this. I'm very proud to say and thankful for our talent acquisition team. We've already hired 260 plus new grads. So we need to work on the pipeline coming in as part of the strategy for workforce versus trying to steer it with a staffing ratio bill. So we also are providing some clinical instructors for the schools so they can increase their cohorts. And then also those students get used to our sites and then eventually want to stay with us. So we're excited about that work.
Yeah, for sure. And so there is a ton of work going on workforce development. So we're really trying to think about how we can be innovative, how we can live our vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America by partnering together with institutions of higher learning in our communities, in some cases providing support in terms of faculty members, sometimes including even financial support, even in tough financial times, to ensure that we can continue to build that workforce, that nursing workforce, and other clinical workforce to sustain us and ensure that we can deliver the care that the community expects us to deliver for now and well into the future, which is certainly important. And, you know, Sharon, one of the other things that we've been focusing on increasingly is workplace violence against our care team. And certainly in the day and age in which we live, and watching news reports of events across the country, this is something that is top of mind for many of our care team. And so we've been doing a lot of work on that. We're in the middle of having a fairly substantial assessment performed for the organization to understand where we have opportunities to continue to become a safer work environment for our care team. And at the same time, we are also supporting legislation that is designed to really, you know, tighten the penalties for individuals who are inappropriate in a healthcare setting to really help protect our workforce. Mm-hmm.
The recent additive to the legislation would make it beyond nursing in terms of people who were harmed in the ED. It would go beyond just nurses. It would go to any of the care team members who someone chose to harm, and that would move that forward, which I think is very beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. So Sharon, you have been incredibly busy since you arrived at MaineHealth, and we're grateful for all of your efforts. Do you want to talk about some of the things that excite you about the future of nursing at MaineHealth?
I feel we need to innovate care. So there are some things that we could look at, such as virtual nursing in different ways. We're expanding video safety monitoring in different ways. We're looking at standardizing pay practice so we're not competing internally. We're looking at an internal float pool opportunity. We're always trying to hire, so we're trying to even onboard some of our travelers and bring them into the family. And we're working on, of course, all our safety measures that we need to, including noise on the unit, falls with injury, skin. So there's just a ton of work we're doing. And many of the team are doing fabulous at it. It's just really awesome.
Yeah, we really do. It is inspiring to spend time with our frontline care team, hearing about what they're doing, learning about their work, and seeing the real impact that they're making on our patients. And so mentioned a lot of things that are really important. And, you know, some of that is already starting to kind of pay some benefit. And so, as we mentioned before here, we're seeing a decrease in nursing turnover.
Yes.
We're seeing a decrease really on all care team turnover. In fact, we've already exceeded our scorecard goal this year, which we thought was a pretty challenging goal in the environment. And overall care team turnover is now better today than it was in 2019 before the pandemic. Now, we still have a long way to go to continue to make our workplace even better, to continue to support our care team, and to continue to make sure everyone wants to stay here for their entire career as an organization. But you and your team have been working hard on the nursing front to ensure that this really is a good place for our nurses.
I really do need to take the opportunity to compliment the CNOs. They are my team, my cohorts. I'm so grateful for them. It really energizes me to work with that full team. And they really do work very hard and care immensely for their care teams.
Yeah, it's it really is a remarkable team of CNOs at every local health system. Some of our nursing leaders in the medical group, we're very, very, very fortunate to have an incredible caring group of individuals. Really, at the end of the day, nursing is really about caring
about
others.
And for sure.
We have a team that really has, just seems to me, to have an unlimited ability to care for both the patients in front of them as well as each other, which is tremendous. So Sharon, thank you for sharing all of that. That was a lot. So Caroline, think you're ready to take maybe some questions?
That sounds good. We can do that. So again, if you've got questions for Sharon or Andy, put them in the chat. In the meantime, I'll start with an emailed question that we got. Actually, I think it was a chat question from the end of the last program when you and I were out, Andy, and kudos to Kelly and John for filling in for us last time. Sarah wanted to know if it would be possible for each unit to see the numbers and a chart about how much they are spending throughout each fiscal quarter on every floor. She said she thinks that if we know what our budgets look like on each floor, we can better allocate those funds as a team.
Yeah, thank you for that, Caroline, and Sarah for asking the question. And so my understanding is I think finance got back directly to you to put you in touch with your director who can help share that information with you. Having said that, the intent certainly is now with a balanced scorecard is that we are now working on ultimately distributing a relevant balanced scorecard to every unit. And so there should be some financial metric around performance to budget on that eventually. So you'll have the ability not only to see where you're at, but to actually kind of make decisions around controlling that. And so the intent is long term that we continue to push more of that authority to our front lines to give them some latitude within their budget around finances to understand how they can best care for the patients in front of them or best accomplish whatever the other job is that that unit performs. So if it's one of our administrative or corporate areas, for example. So I'm excited to say that more of that will be coming to you, more of that transparency, more of your ability to influence it directly. And we really think that will help make us a much better organization longer term. So fantastic question. Thank you for asking.
We have another question from Maddie, and this gets to the issue of staffing shortages that we've been talking about, which we have in nursing, but also across the system. And Maddie said, with the staffing shortages system-wide, we must find ways of attracting talent from outside our state. With the current and escalating increase in anti-LGBTQ plus sentiment across much of the country, is there an opportunity for targeted outreach to LGBTQ plus Americans who are considering relocation? Maddie goes on to say, she feels like we could simultaneously bolster our workforce knowledge base and cultural competency around LGBTQ plus healthcare issues by bringing in professionals with that lived experience.
Maddie, fantastic. I thought that was a fantastic question and great strategic thinking about how we can continue to grow and expand our workforce. And when you think about the fact that, as Maddie stated, it's true, we're not probably going to be able to sustain our workforce simply by trying to recruit only in the states of Maine and New Hampshire. We're going to have to think about how we can expand beyond that. And while diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging are just the right thing to do for us as an organization, doing all that we can to create an inclusive workforce where people feel that their ideas are important and that they can contribute and be their best and authentic self every day. It's also an important talent acquisition strategy because we need to ensure that we can attract people from various backgrounds, ethnicity, social orientation, gender identity, to really be the kind of workforce that we're going to need to be in the future. So in addition to it being the right thing to do, I think it's a really important strategic imperative for us as an organization, for sure. And that's why we're investing in diversity, equity, and training this year for all of our executives to really expand our capabilities, competencies, and comfort in engaging in those topics. So this is a wonderful way to continue to not only create greater diversity within the organization, attract individuals who may be looking for a new place to live and a new opportunity for work. It's such a good idea that we talked with Ryan Polly, who leads our diversity, equity, inclusion efforts, and Helene Kennedy, who leads our talent acquisition team. And the two of them came up with the idea of putting together a task force to look at how we could try to think about this opportunity in the future. So Maddie, you're going to see some action, I think, occur because of this really wonderful idea and a great question. So thank you for that.
We have a question in the chat from Karen. Karen said, I've seen the new logo. I've seen it in an email signature. Is the logo ready for use? Where can I get one?
So not quite yet is my understanding. And my understanding is sometime probably next year in 24, we'll start to have the logo begin appearing more frequently as we begin sort of the gradual transition to a unified MaineHealth brand. So be patient on that, and you'll get to see the new logo again. In the meantime, you may find it in the email that was sent, and you may be able to print it and cut it or something. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet, but anyway, it'll come in the future.
Yes, it's not ready for use publicly at this point is the point. But it is great that people are excited.
Like cut it with scissors and like get some scotch tape and maybe like stick it on a vest.
Put it up on your computer so it just makes you feel good.
Okay.
That sounds good. All right, I got a question from Alex. Since the implementation of the workforce committee to approve all new job listings, can you give an estimate of how many this committee is able to process or discuss each week in that weekly meeting?
Sharon, do you have any insight into that?
I am pretty sure they look at all that are presented and try to get an answer in there so that there's a quick turnaround in terms of asking the question. So I'm pretty sure they do get through almost all of them.
I think that's right. And Sharon, have you and your nursing team had any issues or noticed any challenges with that
process?
Not at
this, no. Yeah.
I know that team takes that responsibility very seriously. They meet weekly for the very reason that we understand the urgency around some of those roles. So I'm not sure the exact numbers to report statistics we can find out, but I do know that they sort of stay there until the work gets done.
Okay, we've got another question from a different Maddie, spells it differently. That's how I know it's a different person, who had a question about maternity leave. And Maddie wanted to know if there was a chance that we might increase maternity leave for new parents in the future, any possibility of offering paid FMLA leave for the 12 weeks following the birth of your child.
Yeah, we haven't had that conversation yet, Maddie, and I think maternity leave is something that we're going to have to continue to kind of check in on a regular basis and understand how that impacts us as a culture, how it impacts us as an organization, how it impacts us as a business, and try to balance all of those things. So in the immediacy, there are not plans to really evaluate that, but I think part of our annual evaluation process will continuously look at all of our benefits, and for sure, this is a very important one for much of our care team.
All right, we continue to have a pretty quiet audience today. So I'm going to keep going with these email questions. I was sure that nursing and all these important topics that you've been talking about was going to generate more questions, but so far not so much. So I'm going to go to Jackie's question. Jackie said, I read the email concerning the amended COVID-19 protocols for masking and guidance that started on May 1st. She's read the positive numbers are down and vaccinations are up, but she's not feeling that the statistics are showing the true positive numbers in her community. And she wanted to know if we might reevaluate requiring PTO for COVID-19 absences while there is still mandatory unscheduled 5-day absences for having contracted COVID-19.
You know, it's a fair question. And I think in the short term, the answer is probably not. I think we're going to continue where things are at for now. I think, we are going to continue to learn as we have throughout this entire pandemic. So things will continue to evolve. And so I feel confident we will be taking periodic reviews of this. But for the short term, I think we're probably going to continue the policy as it is.
Jennifer writes in, I believe the MA clinical ladders bonus should be increased as it's remained the same as it was first offered. The clinical ladder, she says, requires a lot of extra work and continuing education should be reevaluated. Taxes are also taken out of the bonus. Therefore, she says, we're not getting the exact amount of the bonus. Any movement there?
Yeah, so I can't really solve the taxes problem. I mean, that's just a reality for all of us in all of our pays, regardless. And so I don't know that we're necessarily thinking about changing that. Now, of course, we'll continue to do market evaluations on a regular basis to ensure our compensation is competitive, that we're staying where we need to in the market. And that has the potential to impact ladders as well over time. Sharon, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
We are starting to look at ladders in terms of standardization and the nursing ladder, but that could expand to others. And of course, Peggy McRae is on the CNO team in terms of the medical group. So that will be coming forward, but that is going to be a pretty big lift because we want to be sure staff are involved in that process.
Yeah, for sure.
We have a question in the chat from Morgan. Morgan says, first of all, welcome, Sharon, and thank you to you and all the clinical staff for all you do and all they do. Morgan wanted to know if there are any plans to look at the availability of resources or care for refugees who have been coming to Maine seeking benefits from Maine Health, but may be turned away because of the lack of resources in terms of staff, appointments, or health coaches.
Do you want to start with that?
I think I'll have you start.
Okay,
I can start
with that. Yeah. So, our access to care team does a tremendous amount of work in terms of trying to find benefits for those individuals. And so they've been able to secure at times some funding sources for care for those patients. Of course, we won't turn anybody away for care. That's part of our charitable mission as a not-for-profit healthcare organization to ensure that that very important part of our community can get access to care. We're also doing a lot of other things to help support those communities through our community health initiatives, our community health improvement teams, and others. And so making sure that we can create access for our entire community is a priority. It's on our strategic plan and will continue to be a big focus for the future. So great question about a really important part of our community that we need to ensure can get the care that they need.
We do have a question in the chat from Miranda. Miranda says, we continue to highlight new hires, but what about retention? I had a 30-year professional peer leave the company recently after a one-year new hire was hired into a comparable role at a higher salary. We traded a fresh professional hire for an experienced current staffer. It felt like a significant loss.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for that circumstance without really necessarily knowing the details. And as we mentioned earlier, we've done a lot to really try to focus on retention and have seen a significant decline in our turnover rate. And so we were retaining much more of our workforce than we were earlier. Again, we set a pretty lofty goal this year around workforce retention, and we've already surpassed it. And that doesn't mean that we're done. We have a lot of work to do to ensure that we're trying to create equity within our healthcare system. Some of that is still a little bit of a remnant from all of us coming together to be one system. Some of it is maybe we just need to continue to focus on updating some of our policies and hiring policies and other things. So a lot of work will continue to focus on that, and because we really do want people to remain here for their entire careers.
This question is for Sharon. It's from Brooke. Brooke says, I've heard about some great work Sharon and the CNO Council is doing on span of control, the number of direct reports that report to the nurses. Can Sharon speak to the initiative and why it matters to the care team and to patient experience?
Our goal is to try to get to approximately 1 to 35 to 40 for a reporting structure. And part of that is so that you can feel you know your leader. You can talk to your leader. You feel like the only time that you don't feel like the only time you see them is when you have your evaluation, so that you'd be able, there'd be a smaller number, it'd be a smaller group, and you'd feel more in touch with what's going on in leadership. That doesn't mean that takes away from your higher level leader, but it helps staff feel more engaged.
Yeah, we think it's important that everyone has the ability to receive meaningful feedback in a timely fashion, and that they have a relationship with those who are evaluating them, helping them grow and develop, and really helping them think about that career path and career ladder in some cases over the future. So this is really important work that you and the team have been investing in, and so really excited about this.
You discussed workplace violence prevention earlier in the program. We had a question come in following up on that. And the question is about what plans there are to bring workplace violence prevention efforts together throughout the system. So there have been a lot of discussion about efforts that are being done individually, but how can we bring the groups together to help each other?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the first things we need to do. So some of us, Sharon and I, got to hear some of the results, or at least the preliminary results of the first pass of our consultants looking at this. And that's certainly going to be one of their recommendations, is that we need to think about how we can sort of partner together as an entire system to ensure that we've got some, you know, really robust safety procedures and policies and resources in place to ensure that our entire workforce is protected. And that's not just our workforce in our hospitals, that's our workforce in our physician practices, our ambulatory settings, our corporate and administrative settings. We've got people all over the place. And so we want to make sure that no matter where you're at, you feel that you're in a safe working environment. So we're going to see a lot of activity on this front. In fact, I spent part of my day yesterday just really in response to some of what I heard on Monday, trying to take some action on this front. So you're going to hear us talk a little bit more about this in the future. And I think you're going to see this highlighted in a way that we can all see what our progress is in creating a much safer work environment for everyone.
Hillary wanted to know if emergency patients or other main health patients without insurance, are they being enrolled with insurance by our care team? She feels like this might be an opportunity to increase our revenue.
Yeah, and so Carol Zuckman and our access to care team, they just recently actually sent some emails highlighting the amount of patients who had no funding for their care have received through the work of this team. It's in total, I think, over $60 million this past year in terms of care that otherwise would have been unfunded, that we've been able to assist patients in getting some sort of payment program for, whether that's insurance, whether that's main care, whether that's Medicaid in the state of New Hampshire, whether it's Medicare, whether it's other federal or state and local programs to help sponsor that care. So we are so fortunate as a healthcare system to have that team And just the amount of incredible work that they do, it's really amazing. So we're very fortunate to really have that resource here at Maine Health.
Morgan had a follow-up to the earlier question about the shortage of resources and wanted to know if there was something that Sharon and Andy could talk about, what Maine Health can do for frontline staff to cope with the shortages of these resources. So maybe just create a safer working environment for our workers at a time when we're having a shortage.
Well, I would say if staff have ideas to please come forward, because we're happy to hear what some of those ideas might be. In addition to, we're going to start some training for staff and reinvigorate those skills. I know we have some learning things that are out there, but we're going to reinvigorate some training for staff so they feel like they're armed with the right information in case they encounter something that they're not comfortable with. So that's part of what we're going to begin to do is training.
Yeah, and to be sure, there are lots of recommendations that have come back from that consulting engagement. And some of them, I think, are sort of ready-made quick wins that we can start unrolling. And so Kelly and I have had that conversation about how do we go ahead and create momentum and start some of that today so we're not wasting time on some of that. And for sure, when we think about resourcing, as we had the conversation with Al in the room, we talked about the need to ensure that this work is resourced, given the importance of it to our workforce and care team. Now, I don't mean to sound intentionally cryptic or vague on some of this, but it is early. We're just getting some of the preliminary results back. And so I expect that in the not too distant future, we're going to probably have an episode where we spend some time talking about this and some other things. But given how fresh the information is, I don't want to say anything that's not necessarily accurate or commit to something that may not be practical until we've had a chance to sort of digest this a little bit more. But I assure you, this is a topic that's simply not going to go away. It's just too important to all of you. And we really want you to feel that you're working in a safe, to know that you're working in a safe environment so you can focus on what you do best, helping us achieve our vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America.
Paul had a question saying, I've had a couple employees having an issue trying to get child psychology services. He says there seems to be a need in our system. Two of them have been waiting several months and knows how hard it is for a parent not to be able to get help for a child. Is there any effort being made on that front?
Yeah, so we have, I can't speak specifically around child psychology, but certainly we have lots of recruitment efforts underway for our behavior, for Maine Behavioral Health and our behavioral health team. And it is, these are difficult days in terms of really finding the number of available psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed social workers, and others to really help deliver that care. We're trying to get creative and think about ways that we can make the opportunities more attractive, how we can remain competitive in the marketplace, and do all of those things. It's a huge problem here in Maine and New Hampshire. Unfortunately, it's a huge problem everywhere. Across the country right now. And so as I meet with colleagues from other healthcare systems, when I talk to community members, this is really a challenge that we're facing everywhere. So part of what we're going to need to do is think about how we can find some creative ways to really expand access. Some of that may be telehealth, which works really well in a behavioral health setting. And in addition to that, think about other ways that we can try to provide additional resources to our primary care providers and others to try to meet some of the demand that's out there. This has become an especially big issue for adolescents right now in the midst of the period after the pandemic. Many of them are really, really dealing with feelings of loneliness and significant change that has occurred in their life, the disruption of their lives. And any of you who are parents of adolescents certainly know and understand this. So I wish we had easier answers than we do at the present time. This is one that we are continuing to really try to brainstorm to come up with some good solutions. But the reality is, I think for the foreseeable future, we're probably going to still continue to face greater demand than availability of providers.
We had a question come in email from Peter about food. Peter was wondering what would be done, could be done to address food choices available to the evening and overnight staff along with patients. He specifically was talking about Maine Medical Center. He said the amount of processed foods provided is, in his opinion, shameful and hypocritical. He feels that the sale of extremely sugary beverages and sweets with ingredients proven to cause severe disease to patients as an example of some of the things he doesn't like seeing in the cafeteria. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting point and don't know specifics about that. But Sharon, I think that's something we can certainly check with our food nutrition team around to understand what healthy options are available, certainly for the workforce, but for visitors as well in the evening.
Great.
Evelyn wanted to know if MaineHealth would consider implementing a PTO purchase plan to provide employees the ability to purchase more time off or sell back days that they haven't used. She was saying, as someone who took protected leave after my son was born, and then since he's been in daycare, needed to periodically use PTO to care for him when he's been sick and out of daycare. She said her PTO has been depleted and it's very, very difficult to use PTO for a holiday or personal day.
Yeah, it really is. And at the same time, really part of the idea behind PTO is to try to create flexibility for everyone's circumstances. So at the present time, we really don't have plans to materially change that, although we recognize that for many of our parents whose children are in daycare, particularly now the kids are back together, masking has gone away, that we're going to continue to see more of those challenges.
Angela says, I am anxiously awaiting fertility coverage information that would go into effect next year. More details and dates, the better. What do you got?
Yeah, for sure. We know this is important to many of you out there. And so don't have any new details to share yet. But as soon as we do, we'll be forthcoming, I promise.
Yes, we know that this is one that people are waiting on. So when there's something to say, something will be said, right?
For sure.
That is what I have for questions. Okay. So thank you. And Sharon, I know that you have a recognition that you wanted to make sure that you did as we were moving to recognitions. And thank you for being with us on the program.
So I just want to take the opportunity once again to thank all the nurses everywhere, medical group, hospitals, home health, behavioral health. We are so thankful for you. That really doesn't capture it completely, but I am so thankful and so honored to be the CNO of MaineHealth, knowing that I work with you all. And I know I express that for the entire senior team. We would not be anywhere without our nurses. I also, though, want to acknowledge our, you know, care team members who nurses need to provide great patient care also. So we are a team and we couldn't do it without any of you. So thank you.
Yeah, we have some amazing nurses within our system for sure. It's an incredible team doing an incredible amount of work. And was just talking with someone this morning who has a loved one in one of our hospitals, just raving about the care that they've been getting and what the nurses have meant to their family members. So big shout out and thanks to all of our nurses for all of their hard work and all that they do each and every day. It really is inspiring. So thank you for that. And Sharon, thank you for being on the program today. We really appreciate you being here today. We also appreciate all the work that you and our chief nurses are doing across our healthcare system to help us achieve our vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America. So, all right, we've got some other recognition for you today. So many of you really commented that you enjoyed seeing Gina Quinn Skillings on the program a few weeks ago. But one thing that she wanted to do was to really get an opportunity to mention a great team that is doing some incredible work. And so this is our MaineHealth Project Echo team. So Kelly Barnes and Heather Vickerson manage this important program that supports the MaineHealth vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America by connecting rural care team members with specialized knowledge. So MaineHealth is one of 900 Echo hubs across 193 countries, reaching an estimated 1.5 million people with over 500 peer-reviewed publications supporting the effectiveness of this learning model. So a sample of MaineHealth's echoes include endocrinology with its clinical champion, Dr. Erwin Brodsky. This is the oldest running echo series and has run 65 echo sessions. Dr. Sandra Stevens is the palliative care clinical champion, which averages 42 attendees with attendees from every county in Maine. The transgender healthcare echo is run by the gender clinic with clinical champion, Dr. Brock Libby, and supports our diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives at MaineHealth. And the newest echo series, behavioral health, is led by a clinical champion, Dr. Stephen Stout, averages 74 participants each session, created due to the demand of current echo registrants for this resource, sort of as we mentioned earlier. So congratulations to the echo team and the tremendous work they're doing, really expanding learning, knowledge, and education across our entire footprint in a really convenient way. So great work. Also have another recognition. This one comes to us from Kelly Elkins. And so she shared this photo of the Nordex team showing its appreciation for their new leader, Guillermo Martinez Torres, during a coffee with Kelly by everyone wearing his signature bow tie. He's one of those bow tie physicians. That was never a bow tie physician, but he is one of those bow tie. He looks good wearing a bow tie. They even got one for Kelly so she could participate. So we're really super excited about that. In addition to that, I just have to say, in my rounding last week, I had the opportunity to venture to St. Joe's Manor here in Portland, where that facility has been taking on a number of our more challenging hospitalized patients who really don't need to be in the hospital anymore. And those patients range in ages from young adults all the way to, you know, they just celebrated a birthday for a resident who was well over 100. And I think it's easy to kind of fall into the stereotype of what you might expect when you walk into a facility like that, particularly a facility that physically is older. But I have to tell you just what an amazing experience that was, getting to meet Mitch Marino, their medical director, Joel, their administrator, talking to some of their care teams. There was not a single person in that place whose smile you couldn't see beaming through their mask, whether they were one of our care team members, whether they were one of the patients, residents of the facility. Just some amazing and inspiring stories of hope and caring with real improvement in the condition of really almost all of those residents, doing some super innovative and creative things, living all of our values, living our values of patient-centered excellence, innovation, really living our value respect in terms of how they work together. And it was really, truly hilarious watching a lot of the residents really make jokes about the physicians and giving them a hard time in a lighthearted and fun and spirited kind of way. So just a big shout out and just heartfelt thank you to everyone at St. Joe's Manor and all the good work that they're doing. So the next open door is going to be May 17th. In the meantime, I want to make sure that each and every one of you are appropriately identifying the patient in front of you and then washing your hands before providing clinical care and make sure that we're doing that at every single encounter, every single time. So thank you all for all that you're doing. And we'll see you back here on May 17th.